WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hello and welcome to Current Sports. It is a beautiful Thursday afternoon. I, of course, am not Al Martin. This is Matt Ludke filling in for just the first portion of the show. Al is busy scrambling around the WKAR studios. He will be in after the quick hit headliners. And let's not waste time. Let's dive right into them. We would start at the Diamond Classic. In the 53rd annual Diamond Classic, Grand Ledge compiled 16 hits against the Hazlitt Vikings in a 17-0 quarterfinal victory. Tough break for Hazlitt. Grand Ledge clobbered on a 10-run fourth inning in which 16 batters stepped up to the plate. They advanced to the semifinal round on June 2nd, facing the winner of today's quarterfinal matchup between Portland and DeWitt. Now, on the other side of the division, Charlotte hung on for a 3-0 win over Potterville, and they will face the winner of Eaton Rapids and East Lansing. Moving on to track and field, the CAAC track white meet, Williamston took the girls and boys titles Wednesday. They secured outright league titles on both the men's and women's side. Tyler Lamar won two events for the Hornets. He won the 200-meter dash in 23 seconds and the long jump with a distance of 21 feet, 9.5 inches. The Hornets also won the 400-meter relay in just under 45 seconds. Lansing Catholic took second in the boys' meet, while Corunna took third for the girls. In the other CAAC division, St. John's swept the team track and field titles in the red division Wednesday night. The Red Wing boys outlasted defending champion Owosso 173-91, while the girls edged the DeWitt Panthers 136-123. So congratulations to Williamston and St. John's, for dominating in the track and field events yesterday. Moving to the NFL and a former Spartan, just days after being waived by the New Orleans Saints, former MSU D-tackle and friend of Current Sports, Mekhijah Reynolds, is heading back across the line of scrimmage for the Miami Dolphins. Originally signed by the Saints to try his hand on the offensive line, Reynolds is heading back to defense where he had his greatest success here at MSU. He signed with the Saints because of ties to former MSU offensive coordinator Dan Roschar, who thought he was an NFL-caliber guard. Reynolds played on both sides of the line at MSU, starting on offense and switching to defense for his junior and senior seasons on his way to a Rose Bowl victory his senior year. Now, in baseball news, and in baseball news that I don't think anybody saw coming, the Cleveland Indians swept the Tigers out of Progressive Field yesterday, completing the series sweep in one of the wildest games of the young season. The 13-inning slugfest featured 21 runs, 30 hits, 5 of which were home runs, and 3 stolen bases, and ended on a walk-off balk, which I think I'm just going to call a balk-off. Former Tiger Ryan Rayburn was at the plate, and Tigers reliever Al Albuquerque balked with the bases loaded to send home the winning run. It's the first balk-off in the major leagues in 3 years. So clearly, fans in Cleveland got their money's worth for those tickets. David Murphy hit a 9th-inning 2-run homer off of closer Joe Nathan to push the game to extras after Cy Young winner Max Scherzer battled through early struggles and 7 earned runs of his own. The Tigers, who seemed unbeatable on the road heading into the series, taking pictures in their Zubaz, return home to Copan, maybe licking their wounds a little bit for a 4-game tilt with the Rangers. We have more on that later because some member of the Rangers, a very prominently paid and prominently featured Ranger, will not be making the trip. More on that later. In the NBA playoffs, oh my gosh, Oklahoma City. Boy, oh boy, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook looked pretty forlorn in the postgame presser because the Spurs used a huge third quarter to take an easy 2-0 lead in the Western Conference Finals with a 112-77 blowout win over the Thunder. San Antonio held Oklahoma City stars Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook to a combined 30 points on 13 of 40 shooting and took control in the second and third quarters. Oklahoma City actually led after one period by 2 points before being outscored 67-36 in the middle quarters. Tony Parker finished with 22 points to lead the way for San Antonio, while Danny Green added 21 points, all on three-pointers. He hit 7 of 10 shots from the three-point line. In college baseball action, and even more local college baseball action, the sixth-seeded Spartan baseball team upset the third-seeded Illinois Fighting Illini 2-1 at the Big Ten tournament over in Omaha, Nebraska. Cam Gibson, son of Kirk, led off with a home run, and Mick Van Vossen grinded out a victory on the mound. The Spartans advance in the winner's bracket of the 8-team double elimination field and play host Nebraska tonight at 6 p.m. They are trying desperately to keep their NCAA tournament hopes alive. They need to win the Big Ten tournament, and they are staying alive by the skin of their teeth with that 2-1 win over Illinois. Heading back to the NFL and back to former Spartans. Former Spartans making a lot of news in the NFL these days. Cleveland fans everywhere rejoiced when the Browns selected Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Football Manziel in the NFL draft, but they may have to wait a while to see him on the field. Browns general manager Ray Farmer said in an interview with a Cleveland radio station that he wants the best player to start at quarterback, and at this juncture, it is clearly former Spartan Brian Hoyer. He said, quote, "That's a good question in regards to the QB controversy. I would tell you that Hoyer is better than Manziel by probably a substantial margin. I would say that because here's a guy that's a 5 or 6 year vet who has been in the league, that knows the defenses, that reads it quicker, that understands it. Hoyer has an advanced calculus degree. Johnny is good at math, but I don't know if he's in the advanced calculus stages. Experience in the league means a lot. It means more than people think." That is pretty good stuff from Ray Farmer, the Browns GM. Now, Hoyer, of course, is currently recovering from an ACL tear he suffered last season, just as it looked like he was turning the Browns around, and he has not yet been cleared for 11-on-11 drill work. Now, we'll move on. We'll stick to the NFL. We'll go to the Lions, and of course, you know, if we're talking about the Lions and it's May, it's probably something to do with Ndamukong Suh. Oh boy, here we go again. Lions defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh has finally made it to the club's offseason workouts, but that hasn't stopped Suh-centric headlines from rolling in. In a 10-minute presser with the local media, Suh spoke of his desire to play in Detroit by referencing his experience back at the 2010 NFL draft.
"I'm here for a reason. I had an opportunity, probably a lot of you guys don't know, I could have gone elsewhere when I was drafted. I had that decision in my hands. I chose not to take it because that's just the way I saw it. There's many ways to do things. You can drop down the draft. You can move up in the draft. People can come get you. There's a lot of things that happen that you guys don't know. It is for sure my choice, but, I mean, like I said, that's water under the bridge. I'm here in Detroit. I'm happy to be here in Detroit, and I'm going to continue to play my heart out as I've always done and continue to do."
Now, while that seems like it almost just seems like posturing to me, and we'll dive into this Suh stuff later in the show. At the end of the day, his presence in camp is a good sign. Now, the Lions are still desperately trying to sort out a long-term deal for the 3-time Pro Bowler and, Evan Dietrich Smith arm stomper, but, you know, it's things like that that kind of make you groan a little bit as a Lions fan, just hearing Suh just saying stuff that doesn't really need to be said. I understand the point he's trying to make. He's trying to emphasize how much he wants to be in Detroit, but saying, well, hey, I could have pulled an Eli Manning and held out and decided not to play for Detroit at all, it just seems like the wrong way to go about it. We will dive into that, and we'll take your calls on it, and really anything you'd like to discuss in the sports world, maybe not even in the sports world. Maybe you want to talk about the weather. Maybe you're still bitter about the Cavs winning the NBA draft lottery. I know Al and myself are. Anything you want to talk about, give us a call, 517-355-9527, and we will dive into it together. Now, we just added this to the headlines because it is a pretty hilarious story. This broke earlier in the week, and now it's kind of making the national rounds. I actually saw ESPN tweeting about it, NFL.com tweeting about it. Everybody is jumping on the Michigan recruiting propaganda with the most glaring spelling error maybe in college football Twitter history. It is a blunder. Oh boy. Okay, so here's a little backstory. Mike Weber is a highly touted running back at Cass Tech. He's teammates with J.Rue Campbell, or at least he was if J.Rue was on the team. He is a highly sought-after running back for the upcoming class. He's got offers from the likes of Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, all the big-time Big Ten schools. Michigan sent him a kind of mock-up of an ESPN The Magazine cover. Oh, boy. The main headline is the man of the year, which there's nothing wrong with that. But then at the top right, it says Michigan's, well, this is what it should say, Michigan's All-American running back, Mike Weber. Instead, it says Michigan's All-Americian running back. All-Americian. Now, I know typos happen, and you know, this stuff happens all the time. People make mistakes, myself included. But this is something you are sending out to a highly sought-after recruit. You want to, you know, showcase your school in a positive light. And for an institution that prides itself on its academic standing and its you know, attention to detail, its big lore and history and the pomp and circumstance of going to Michigan, to have that kind of error on a recruiting handout is almost unforgivable. It is absolutely ridiculous. I can't see a way that Michigan gets out of this unscathed. Obviously, they haven't so far because they're getting roasted by just about everybody. Now, Weber tweeted that himself. He included three emoticons that I'm not going to discuss because I can't believe I'm discussing them in general. But it says, U of M, cold with these edits. And he has the picture there. It's a fine cover otherwise. It's an ESPN The Magazine mock-up. But the typo is glaring. The internet is really taking charge there. You have to know that both Michigan State and Ohio State recruiters are pointing that out, underlining it seven times, and making sure he knows, hey, these guys aren't even paying close enough attention to detail to spell All-American correctly on your recruiting pamphlet. It just seems like a totally avoidable mistake. Alex Scharg is in the studio here. He's actually working on something right now because he wanted to jump in and talk about this too. But it just seems like something so avoidable, absolutely ridiculous, and really just unprofessional. You can tell somebody might be getting fired over that one. And I know it's just a typo, but when these things spiral out of control, this is not the kind of viral attention you want as a big-time university and a big-time football program. Now, for their part, Michigan State also sent Mike Weber a sort of recruiting piece. That one's a little bit simpler, though. It does have a picture of Weber. Now, obviously, all these pictures are photoshopped because he's not in Wolverine or Spartan gear just yet. But the Michigan State one has a nice handwritten message from Coach D'Antonio. Doesn't say anything about you have to come here. Or there's no pressure, and that's kind of the big mantra of Michigan State football recruiting in general. It's not a lot of high pressure. It's just, you know, touting the success of Michigan State football. It says, Mike, dream big, Coach D. Dream big. Doesn't necessarily say you have to come to Michigan State. Just dream big. It's so much simpler, so much easier. And most importantly, it is spelled correctly. And as an English major here at Michigan State, I can say that spelling errors really cast a pall on anything you are trying to say. It does not reflect well on the university, the program, the coaching staff, anybody. And I know that might be blowing it out of proportion for some, but at the end of the day, these are the little, you know, you gotta dot the I's and cross the T's if you want to make it in this business. That's the kind of mistake you can't afford to make, especially with a guy who you see as maybe one of the future cornerstones of your program. So that about wraps up our headliners section of the show. We will actually take it to a quick break right now. We'll be back with more. Hopefully Al will be able to take over the reins here. We'll be back with current sports after this.
I'm I'm Robin Young. That ice cream truck song you may have loved as a kid, turns out it's got pretty racist origins.
There's tons of issues in our country today that have a racist component to them, and not because it's currently malicious, but because its history was founded at a time when the social norms were a little bit different.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That is Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your afternoon host for All Things Considered on WKAR. I've always felt hosting ATC is like being a head chef in a restaurant. You always need to find the right ingredients to make a great dish. You start out with your main course of NPR, throw in a little spice with some White House drama, a pinch of Michigan news, a dash of local news, and you have the perfect recipe for a news feast. All Things Considered, weekday afternoons at 4 on WKAR.
Happy cooking.
Hey, beautiful people, I missed you. I missed you. Thanks a lot to Matt Lucky for holding it down. Boy, what a morning has it been. I have been floating around, as Matt said, around the WKAR studios, TV studios down below, as we had a lot of middle schoolers come and visit the WKAR TV studios. We gave them a pretty cool tour of all of our TV studios around here. I was in Studio F, like I am each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. for Current Sports TV. And the kids, man, they had a great time. You know, it was cool. I talked to them and kind of gave them a rundown of the show. And I did a kind of a fake hosting type of deal, a monologue for about maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And I interviewed a few of the kids, and they had some hilarious answers on who their favorite athletes were. A lot of them, there are a lot of kids out there that absolutely love Kevin Durant. I mean, just about every kid I asked, I mean, who's your favorite athlete? Kevin Durant. Who's your favorite athlete? Kevin Durant. I had one Derrick Rose. I had a few Lionel Messi's. I had, it was a lot. It was pretty fun. And then afterwards, I turned over my mic to one of the kids, and they actually hosted the show. So they brought in the show. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm Phil, you know, and they brought it on and actually interviewed some of their peers. So it was pretty fun.
Al, don't let him do too much. You might be gunning for your job.
Yeah, that might be, yeah,
look,
I might be jobbing.
Phil.
I know Phil. Uh-oh. was, he was great. Phil's not listening right now. He's probably downstairs still. But, man, we had a great time out there, man. And, again, we'll remind you all that you can catch Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m., folks, 10 p.m. each and every Thursday night on WKAR-TV. I sat down with James Moore last night. James, a great guy, great guest, former MSU fullback for the MSU Rose Bowl 1988 champions. He was a great guy and has a pretty cool motivational speaking company that he's launching off the ground entitled SWAP. You'll get to hear what that acronym means tonight at 10 p.m., so tune in. It's a great time. You also get to see some highlights from the Diamond Classic, which round two starts tonight, actually. I will be out there down at Cooley Law School Stadium as that tournament gets in the thick of things there. And we'll talk about so much more. I talked about Russell Byrd a little bit last night. So, again, catch that tonight, 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Well, Matt, a lot happened yesterday in the world of sports. You know, I guess we can start with you kind of, you know, gave a very well-produced introduction into the whole Ndamukong Suh situation. If you will, and you heard what he said, folks, in the bite, Ndamukong Suh. You know, it was pretty interesting when he came out and said this because, like you said, I do understand why he came out and said it because he's been criticized a lot. He's been criticized a lot for, you know, not showing up to the beginning of OTAs and, you know, now that he's part of the team, he's still getting criticized and scrutinized from him. And media want to know, you know, and you know, a lot of questions were fired at him. And to kind of put everything to bed, you know, he released that comment and said, hey, you know, if I had an opportunity to go somewhere else and look, I'm still here with you guys. You know, I want to build something here. And I understand the whole thought process behind it. And, I looking at this story and, you know, I can't remember if when we talked about it earlier this week when he showed up to OTAs, I don't even know if I voiced my opinion on this, but I do believe that part of the reason, I'm going to go record saying this, I do believe that part of the reason he didn't show up to OTAs, I think it had to do some of it with the deal not being done, the long-term deal not being done. At the end of the day, I look at the NFL and look at all professional sports as a business, and if a deal like that isn't made where your contract isn't extended with a franchise that you do say you want to be a part of, you're going to be a little salty about it, just naturally, I think. And another aspect I think is important to definitely mention in this story is that Sue in the past has not... He's usually done his off-season workouts elsewhere, you know, and this is kind of a new thing because Now, Sue, for me, from a leadership angle, him showing up to OTAs, for me, is very important due to the fact that now he's a leader on this team. He's been voted a captain. And for me, when you talk about leadership and building bonds with your players, you want to be there, even if you look at it even in the littlest or minusculest type of eye. Even though this might be OTAs, there are a lot of players that don't show up to OTAs and don't take part in it. And Sue, in the past, like I said, he's done his offseason workouts elsewhere when it comes to this. But being a leader on the team, it's important for you to show up to things like this because it sends the right message to others around you. Now, that being said, again, this is a business as well. And if you're a little salty about your deal not being set in stone and about your future, if there's a question mark about your future with this squad, and if things are not set in stone yet, and you're a little perturbed about it, then, hey, you may not show up to OTAs. So it's a lot of moving parts to this story, and I do understand why Sue made the comment. I don't know if he should have said it because at the end of the day, I mean, others out there, fans out there don't understand what's going on behind the locker room. I'm pretty sure his teammates more than anybody know about Sue's commitment to the team. We're not in the locker room every day. We're not talking to Sue every day on a daily basis. So the perception out there from a fan perspective and a media perspective, you got to take that with a grain of salt at the end of the day. But I do believe why he said it. He wanted to put it to bed. But I do believe, again, I do believe that part of the reason he didn't show up to OTAs in the beginning had to do a little bit with that long-term deal not being done.
Yeah, there's good points to be made on both sides of it. And part of it is just his personality. Mm. It's not like he's ever been super chipper and excited to talk with the media.
Right.
Especially about practice habits or, you know, contract negotiations or any of that. He's just kind of a salty guy. I mean, it comes across in his play. That's what you want as a defensive tackle. You want a guy who's got a little bit of an attitude. But when it takes it to the media, you can see how it kind of rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah.
And how it can be misconstrued. And that's why he's kind of one of the most beloved and reviled Lions on the roster.
Right.
The other thing you mentioned is, you know, he's often done his off-season workouts elsewhere. And, I mean, geez, last year he was on ABC's Splash diving off diving boards with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Louis Anderson. So at least he's doing football-related things this year. But on the other side of it, when you have a new coach and you are viewed as a leader of the team, you have to be there. You have to be there. You have to send a message that you are on board with the new regime and willing to do whatever it takes to help the team win.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think is kind of interesting is, can you imagine if he played in the 1970s or 80s?
Mm.
There would be none of this. I feel like all of this stuff is kind of just a product of the 24-hour sports news cycle.
Yeah, I agree.
It's product of constant media, you know, almost badgering to get a quote from him to find out something. And I mean, I'm not blaming the media. That's their job.
Right.
But it just seems like he's a guy who would fit so much better in a different era.
Exactly.
When he could just play and that'd be it.
Exactly. Well, you know, I bring up the notion all the time, the quote of being a victim of your own success. I think now, especially in today's modern day league, I mean, you have to kind of, you know, have a second eye or third eye to everything you do now, because everything you do is scrutinized based on, like you said, the 24-hour news cycle, the 24-hour tweeting, the 24-hour Facebooking. I mean, everything is so much in the public eye. I mean, your cell phone, for my goodness, has a camera on the back of it, for goodness sake. I mean, everything is out there so much, in that Ndamukong Suh, you know, is one of those guys that, you know, he does come off, you know, he's not a media darling. He does come off as a guy who carries himself with a chip on his shoulder in the way he talks, in the way he acts, in the way he carries himself on the field. That's who Sue is. And I do like it. One thing I've always said about Sue, I do like it because I think it brings an identity to the Lions that's needed. And if anything, it kind of exudes toughness out there. You know, and Sue is a very talented player. I am very confident the Lions are going to make him one of the highest defensive ends in the entire league, without a doubt. I think he's a very talented guy. I would be hurt if Sue left. I think Sue is a heck of a player. We've seen shades of him. Maybe, you know, he was pretty inconsistent as the year dwindled down for the Lions last year. But overall, his overall body of work for the Lions, I think, has been unbelievable. And I love to have him on the squad. I love Sue as a Lion.
I do too, and I think it's kind of funny, you know, how much Detroit embraced like the Bad Boys Pistons.
Right. Right.
And Sue is, you know, I know it's a stretch to kind of compare the two, but he does kind of fit that mold as a football player. Like he takes it one step over the line. Mm-hmm. He'll get in your face. He's trying to get in the opponent's head. But since he has to give a 10-minute podium session with the media, and he is, you know, I wrote down some adjectives to describe him: surly, grumpy, and salty. I mean, those are not three things that make you a media darling, like you said. So I feel like just his personality is just part of his personality. It doesn't mesh well with a rabid NFL media.
Exactly. I agree. I definitely agree with you. All right. Hey, man, I believe we have a caller right now. Mike from Saginaw. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing there, Al?
I'm doing very well, my brother.
I just was listening to your 24-hour media, the people wanting quotes and everything. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to SportsCenter about Mark Cuban and saying that he has prejudices and he had issues of that about how he feel about certain things. And I just think about it. I said, why all of a sudden these people like Donald Sterling didn't register his opinions about that? We had to learn it on the secret tape when Mark Cuban does it and stuff, because he's always front and center. He always have opinion on certain things and everything. I think it's really, from his point of view, I think it's, I'd rather hear Mark Cuban say stuff like that than somebody that's in the background and don't say anything until somebody catch him saying something like.
So you did like Mark's comments?
Yeah. Well, I don't really have a problem. I don't have a problem with it at all, man. Because we all flawed as human beings. We all coming short of God. You know, he's not like a person out there. He has a lot of wealth and everything. Something that I probably never acquire in life. But it is for what it is. I think. We all have issues of that because God has blessed us with gifts and talents, and some of us just fall short on achieving those goals. But being a human being, that's what we all are. So right. I think, to be honest with you, you know, I mean, is that a big deal, really? What do you think?
Well, I tell you what. Well, first of all, thanks, Mike, for your call. Appreciate it. When it came to Mark's comments, I think this was kind of a situation on Mark trying to sort of repair the image of the NBA in a way. In light of this whole Donald Sterling situation and Donald Sterling's comments, which we all know, I mean, it's been talked about for weeks upon weeks now. We know what Donald Sterling said. The NBA has kind of taken a hit when it comes to its overall perception in social regards such as racism. And I think Mark Cuban, in a way, him being a owner and in a position, a prominent position like that, he felt, you know, a need to come out and kind of, you know, put a Band-Aid on it, if you will, by saying, hey, we're all prejudiced in some way or another. You know, if I see a black kid down the street in a hoodie or a guy, white guy, bald head with tattoos walking down the street, hey, I may turn the other way. You know, he had some interesting, I don't know if you've seen it, Matt, but he had some interesting comments when it came to it. And, you know, when he made the comments, I'm sitting there saying, okay, this is Mark Cuban, a guy who is a prominent owner. Everybody knows his face when it comes to the NBA. This is a guy trying to polish up or trying to make the NBA, you know, be perceived in a different light, in a more positive light, and try to kind of, you know, like, again, put a Band-Aid on this story. It may be a very small Band-Aid, but it's an attempt. And that's what I saw out of the whole thing.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, and this isn't just sports, this is just American culture in general. Mm. It is always better to get out in front of a potential story.
Right.
You know, it's always better to admit your faults before they get uncovered by TMZ or something. Like, when you get caught saying or doing something on camera or on tape, you're going to get raked over the coals by the entire country. Right. I mean, people are going to go crazy. But if you kind of come out and say something, make a statement about it, you're kind of controlling the story then. And I think that's part of what he's trying to do too, both in repairing the NBA's image. And I mean, I don't think he's going to, you know, I don't think he's going to have anything nearly as bad as the Donald Sterling tapes ever.
No.
But at the very least, he's kind of admitting his faults in an open way, letting people in, letting people get to know him, on his terms instead of having it get out and then having to scramble and try and cover things up or try and limit the damage. So I think by being preemptive and being proactive, he's kind of giving himself all the power in the narrative.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And in that, hopefully, you know, salvaging some power now towards the NBA's perspective when
exactly.
it comes to the perception that owners now have in the league. So, interesting story. I'm glad Mike brought that up because I definitely want to bring it up at least at some point throughout this hour. Again, if you want to let your voice be heard throughout this hour, we have about 30 minutes left in the show. Give us a call right now. Pick up that phone, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit the second break. When we come back, we'll talk about Mekhi Reynolds as well as the Tigers' balk from yesterday's game. Oh my gosh, I couldn't believe that happened. And also the Spurs, who look pretty darn good. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
As a dog handler in the Marines, Jose Armenta's job was to search for IEDs with his dog. On a mission in Afghanistan, Armenta was injured in an IED explosion. He lost both legs above the knees. The dog was not injured and was reassigned to another handler. On the next Fresh Air, Armenta tells us how he was finally reunited with his dog. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Oh, man, Alex, you just play that. You did not just play that. Shaggy's It Wasn't Me. Oh, I love that song, It Wasn't Me. Well, I think Al Albuquerque is waking up and saying, It Wasn't Me right now because, man, was that bad yesterday or what, Matt? I mean, you saw it come. It was a great game. I mean, it went to extra innings. It's funny. I got to call Alex. I got to call him out because I wish I could roll the tape back because you and I, we knew that this incredible streak of the Detroit Tigers would come to an end. We chose that the Indians would at least steal one game. Alex predicted a sweep, but the other way. It did not happen. The Tigers were swept by the Indians. That was a tough one to watch, Alex.
Yeah, I didn't think the Zubas would be that effective, guys. I had no idea that the curse of the Zubas would be an actual thing here. But I did call the Tigers sweeping. I mean, if you looked at the Indians team right now, you would probably agree. But at the same time, who would have thought that Al... Not Al Woods. I'm not talking about Al Jordan, but Al Albuquerque here is balking it up and costing the Tigers a game. So, yeah, unfortunate.
That's pretty bad. You know, I had a conversation this morning with our floor director for Current Sports TV, Jason Vlahos, and Jason and I were talking and debating about, you know, the whole balk call. And, you know, he took the other end of saying that, you know, the MLB needs to really look at that rule of what is a balk and what isn't. For me, guys, I thought it was a clear, I really don't think so. I think that the MLB, you know, made the right decision. The umpires made the right decision in this because to me, it was a clear, blatant, in your face. He started his motion. It looked as though he was about to flinch a little bit and decided to say, oh, I take it back. Nope. And boom, game over.
Yeah. No. And Rayburn knew it immediately. Mm-hmm.
They hopped on that very quick.
He was all over it. And it's just... what a way to lose a series, you know, your momentum. I mean, just a gut punch because like you said, I mean, we thought that they'd lose one game. Mm-hmm. But like Alex said, the Indians are terrible.
They're bad.
I mean, they had just gotten beat over a 3-game series, I believe 20-6 by the A's. Mm-hmm. They had no business sweeping the Tigers. And yet here we are. Scherzer has a weak outing.
Yeah, Scherzer, I mean, seven runs and seven innings.
Struggles through the seven innings.
Yeah.
Was in a position to win the game.
Right.
And then the bullpen, again.
Again.
Just lets the bottom fall out.
Yep. Same song, different game.
A balk off.
Yep. A balk off.
Does not happen very often. First time in 3 years. That's just, gosh.
Yeah. It was sticky to watch, man. And again, the Tigers, and it's just fitting that, you know, the bullpen blows the game for them.
Now, if Cabrera wasn't ejected... Do you think the game would be different?
Another thing I want to bring up. I don't think Miguel Cabrera should have got ejected. I mean, I thought he was arguing the call. He probably had a few choice words, but I don't think he should have been thrown out the game for that. I thought that was ludicrous. I don't know if you guys saw that ejection, but I thought that was ludicrous. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But again, the Tigers still, they put themselves in position to win that game. They still had a chance. It went to, what, 13 innings last the afternoon. And you're sitting there like, okay, Max Scherzer was, again, he was not great. I, you know, as much as I like to criticize the bullpen, the starting pitching, again, Max Scherzer, he did not have a great outing. Again, 7 runs, 7 innings. And, you know, you just looked at that game and said, okay, well, even though, you know, Max may not have had a great outing, let's see. This is going to be a good test for this bullpen to see if they can get squeak out of this game. And, you know, down the stretch, it just seemed as though things just kind of crumpled. You know, bases loaded. Albuquerque goes out there and you saw what happened. So hopefully they can rebound. Again, it's still MLB season is a long it's not a sprint. It's not a sprint. It's definitely a cross-country meet, without a doubt. And I think the Tigers will be okay. If anything, this makes them reevaluate that, hey, they got to be on top of their game. They can't lay eggs. They got to be on top of their game no matter who they play. And have to bring it. And, you know, this is kind of a wake-up call game, a wake-up call series, if you will, for them.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing about baseball is the season is so long that you can have, you know, three-day periods where the worst team in the division smacks around the best team in the division.
Right.
Like, that's just the nature of the season. So many games. I mean, at the end of the year, I don't think anybody's going to be looking back and saying, wow, do you remember that Indians-Tigers series in late May? No, nobody's going to think about that at all. But that's the beauty of baseball, that anything can happen. That's why it's so impossible to predict, because from day to day, anything can happen.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
It's just a lesson to be learned from the Tigers that, like you said, they have to keep the effort consistent. They can't go out there and expect to win no matter who they're playing and no matter who they send out to the mound. Because as good as Verlander and Scherzer are, they are human. They are going to have off days.
Right.
And the rest of the team has to pick them up.
Yep.
And it just didn't happen this week.
Yeah, and that's the measure of a great team. I mean, you know, if somebody is having a bad day, let's say the starting pitching is having a bad day, I mean, you know, can the hitting get there? You know, can the bullpen come in and produce a solid effort? I mean, depth is so big and contributes so much to the success of the great teams. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding hasn't been made yet for the Tigers. You know, they still got a long time to go here. We haven't even hit the postseason yet. So, hey, we still got some time left. You know, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this before we transition to the next part of the show, guys. Prince Fielder had some choice comments, a choice word, if you will, for the Detroit series coming up this weekend. I don't give a beep about the Detroit series. He told the reporters that on Tuesday. Quote, I just want to get back, end quote. Guys, what did you think about those comments? I personally loved it. I'm going to be honest with you. I loved this because you know what? You know, Prince is a guy who's been criticized left and right, especially from Detroit fans, especially from me, about his play in the postseason. I think he's an unbelievable regular season player. He showed that when he was here in Detroit. He was a great compliment to Miguel Cabrera for quite some time. But when the playoffs happened, he just said, all right, see you later, guys. I'm hitting my summer break early. And boom, it just was like, okay, where are you? And, you know, we all know what transpired. He's now in Texas now. It looks like he won't play in that series. He's hurt, I think. And, you know, of course, the media are hounding him about, you know, okay, talk about, you know, playing Detroit. You're going back to Detroit now. This is, who know, they let go of you. You know, what are your thoughts on it? And as a guy, I mean, at some point, as a man and as a guy trying to move on from the past, you just get fed up with it. And you say, hey, man, I'm done with that. I'm in Texas now. Let me be, you know? And you kind of get fed up because from that perspective, I kind of feel him on that. I don't give a crap about the series. I'm just trying to get healthy and play baseball right now. So I kind of feel him on that.
No, I do too. And you know, after last postseason, I don't know if anyone in Detroit ever thought they'd say this, but it's a professional answer. Even though there's an expletive in it,
right?
He is still focused on the right things, and that's getting his body right and getting back on the field.
I agree.
At the right time for him. Now, he has, I believe he's going in for some tests today.
Was it a back injury?
Treatment Saturday. It's his neck.
His neck injury. Okay, neck injury.
Yeah, he's got a herniated disc in the neck. He'll receive kind of tests and treatment today and Saturday. He might be there for Sunday, but he's not making the trip now.
Right.
Either way, like you said, I mean, he had to have just been badgered all offseason with questions about what happened in Detroit. He must have circled this on the calendar as well.
Right.
Going back to Detroit.
Right.
May 22nd.
It's got to even be more frustrating for him because I don't care what athlete, what sports you're from. If you leave a team and that the first time you do go back and play that team, you want to perform well.
Yeah,
and
it's an emotional thing. You want to play, and you want to play well.
And
I agree.
It's frustrating that he probably won't even get to play. you know, in this game, in this series, you know? So I feel him on. I definitely like this comment, even though, like you said, even though it did have the F-bomb in there, I still enjoyed the comment. Alex, what do you think about it?
For me, do I like the comment? Yeah, I do. It's an emotional comment. You could see there's some tension in it. Getting back is on the diamond, but it also can mean maybe subconsciously getting back at the Tigers specifically. Do I like it? Yes, but I think it's more of a October comment. I think it's more of a comment you make when you're going to play the Tigers in the playoffs, when you're back in the playoffs rather than a typical season game. You're going to see this team a couple other times this year. It's not like this is a one-and-done thing where you have this emotional state. I think in this situation, in this case, he's been nagged about the question like you both have said. He's coming back from injury. He obviously left Detroit with some rumors floating around. We don't really need to get into that, but yeah.
Well, we do know. I know when that happened, that situation with, you know, when he did have that just terrible, terrible late season stretch last year in the postseason for the Tigers. I mean, he got a divorce, I believe, and there were some custody battles going on with his kid. So, I mean, that alone does a lot on your mind. I mean, that weighs definitely heavy. I remember talking with Rico Beard about that, and I believe it was Tori Hunter who came on his show and said that he's been battling with this whole divorce situation. So he was going through a lot last season. So, but yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah. No, the other only thing I have to add for Prince is that for him, what is a good performance for him coming back? Are you looking for you guys looking for
one RBI?
One RBI. Yeah. Are you
just
looking,
one RBI and he's good at matchup?
Just get off the Schneid, man.
right.
Zero playoff RBI. If he makes the postseason. Even one RBI.
Play average for me.
You can't get any worse than he was.
If he comes to this series, he gets an RBI. Was it 4-game series?
Yep.
Yeah.
4-game series, and let's say he goes 2-for-12. Is that a good performance?
Well, I mean, you gotta also look though at the injury aspect of this too, because he'll just be coming back from a herniated disc in the neck. Nothing to play about.
And that's what I'm saying is, do you kind of take it easy on him because he's coming back from an injury? Or how frustrated?
I don't even know if
fans...
he'll play. I don't think he'll play.
I doubt he will. But
yeah, I doubt he'll play.
Speaking to your point about how it's like a playoff quote, I feel like that's part of the reason that it was so tense. Is that he knows that these questions are going to follow him for the entire year.
Right. Won't you want to?
I would.
Get
I
out
think
the,
he would
get
rather
way
get
early?
It out of the way right now. Right. And now that he can't be on the field, he's going to have to endure more of this for the next time the Rangers and Tigers play. And especially if they make the playoffs, he knows it's going to, you know, ratchet up to 11. And he's just going to be badgered. Probably 11 questions out of 10 will be about the Tigers and what happened in Detroit. So I think from his perspective, you can just see the frustration bubble over. He wants to get this out of the way, put it behind him, and it just won't happen.
Exactly. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, because if he didn't, I think, Alex, if he didn't do it early, right now before the series, I mean, these questions would have continued to ensue and definitely hound him the rest of the season. It could become a
distraction. True, but you're gonna get questions all the time regardless.
Yeah, but and I think now reporters are gonna say, okay, well, he doesn't give a F about the Detroit series. I'm not gonna ask him about it anymore. You know. Some reporters have that they won't. I know if I was reporting, he said that. I'm like, all right, well, next subject.
They may not directly ask the question, but it may be subliminally in a question or two.
Prince is a smart guy. I'm pretty sure he can delve into that and solve the puzzle. So, all right, guys. Well, let's keep it moving here. Really quickly, guys. Mekhijah Reynolds, as Matt talked about in our quick hit headliners today, Mekhijah Reynolds, he will now be trying to make the roster in Miami, the Miami Dolphins. How about that? As an offensive lineman, making the switch now because he's switching from defensive lineman. The Saints tried to make Reynolds an offensive lineman. It didn't work. They waived him. And, you know, I think this is a good move for him. I think that for the Saints, you know, looking at the story, maybe they tried to make Reynolds an offensive lineman. You know, I think Reynolds showed that he can be a solid defensive lineman for you. For MSU, he's one of those guys that, you know, was not really highly touted, not really highly talked about throughout most of his MSU career, but he made people talk about him his senior year because he played outstanding. I mean, he had a few big stops. He had a big stop in the Big Ten Championship game, if you remember, when he sacked, he stopped Braxton Miller for that one-yard game. I'll never forget that moment. Then he had some great outings and some great plays during the Rose Bowl. I mean, Mekhijah Reynolds made his name, and he made you know, NFL scouts at least look at him. And he's one of those guys. He's a blue collar type of a guy. Again, became a solid defensive lineman at MSU and grew very comfortable at that position. So, I mean, when the Saints, you know, when Rosar called him out and said, hey, come over here and we'll put you on the offensive side of things, I mean, that's kind of a different transition for him. And I think, I just think they tried to force feed him that position, which really didn't fit. You know, they ended up waving him now, and now you go to a Miami Dolphins team. Now, the Dolphins, you know, it's interesting because you look at their defense. They have the 21st worst – they had the 21st worst defense in the league last year. Gave up 359 yards per game on average. Gave up the 9th most yardage on the ground last season. So they definitely have some work to do. And it's all about Mekhijah proving himself because, again, he wasn't a highly touted guy. He didn't get drafted in the NFL draft. But he became a talked about player in his senior year. He's been working his butt off. I've been seeing his Instagram and Twitter, you know, left and right, and he seems to be working his butt off. He seems very focused. We've had him on the show before. His personality is outstanding. I think he will be, you know, a coach's dream to coach. It's just about him outplaying the rest of those guys that are competing for those positions to make that roster.
Absolutely. And you know, when I saw that he went to Miami, I was extra excited to see that he was moving back to the D-line. A, because I don't think anybody wants to play on Miami's offensive line after what happened last year.
Terrible.
And B, he looked more productive, and he was more productive on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they had a terrible run defense. He can potentially help that. He was one of the big kind of road grader run stuffers for the MSU defense, which, by the way, was the best in the country. So he's got value as a defensive tackle. The other thing is, I kind of wonder if he's kicking himself for not originally signing with the Patriots, because he had an offer from New England. He decided to go to New Orleans because he had the familiarity with Dan Roshar. I wonder if he's wishing he was a Patriot.
Hopefully we can get him on. I want to get him on and talk about it. We were supposed to have him on last week, I think it was, and I've been blowing him up, and he's going through a lot right now. I actually texted him 2 days ago, and he's still going through a lot of transitions in training and whatnot. So we're gonna get Mekhijah on to talk about this, and I'm very interested to see that too. If he is regretting not taking that first decision to go and play with Tom Brady and the Patriots initially, because I could definitely see that angle to things as well. I could definitely see that.
But what better than going to a place that needs help? That's for me is the point where you can make more of an impact, regardless on the offense or defense. The Saints and the Patriots, both on the offensive side and defensive side of the ball, generally pretty good right now. And I feel like Miami, looking at their defense and what they need, I feel like he has more of a chance there rather than he would have if he went to the Patriots.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair point. That's definitely a good point there, Alex. And living in Miami, man, Miami's nice, man.
It's true.
Nice weather and the beach and the palm trees.
I'll be with a Wolverine or two down there, though.
Yeah, but
there's
still
some Wolverines in Miami.
Miami, you got to love that, man. I love Miami. All right, guys. Well, the NBA playoffs. Woo, it is not looking good for my championship prediction as San Antonio Spurs, guys. Man, are they good. They're really, really good. You know, looking at that game last night, and especially in that third quarter, you know, as San Antonio just kind of put things to bed, I actually turned the channel and started watching 24 Live Another Day, because that game was it's just bad. And I don't know if the Thunder are going to live another day after this series is done, because it just looks as though right now San Antonio is such, and you know, so, always
so,
harp on.
So you think the Spurs were just good? It's not that the Thunder played poorly.
The Thunder played poorly, but at the end of the day, I think people need to stop focusing on, because when I woke up this morning and turned on SportsCenter, and the first thing they're talking about, oh, the poor play from the Thunder, they could have did more, they could have played better. Yeah, we all know that. But I think people need to start giving more credit to the San Antonio Spurs for playing the game of basketball how it should be played. You know, in the NBA, we praise guys like LeBron and, you know, Kevin Durant and, you know, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, you know, the superstars of the league. We praise those guys, but very rarely, you know, it's very rare we actually sit down and just really talk about how great this Spurs team plays as a whole. I mean, when they're out there playing, I mean, it's at least, you know, sometimes 5, 6, 7 passes before a shot is thrown up, trying to find the high percentage shot. And you saw it last night. I mean, I go back to a few plays last night where, you know, the ball went from, you know, Tiago Splitter finding Tim Duncan on a cut. I mean, a big man to big man, you never see that in the NBA. I mean, that's Greg Popovich's genius and he's gotten the Spurs to buy into team ball, and they go so deep. Kawhi Leonard is another a great guy. I watched the interview with Kawhi Leonard before that game yesterday, and it was so funny. I was watching the interview, you know, as he sat down with David Aldridge, who is a reporter with TNT, and he's so humble. He's so quiet. You know, he'll give you, I mean, he'll speak one to two sentences and go into the next question. I mean, he's a guy who is not asking for the spotlight, but is bought into the system, is going to play hard for Greg Pop and that team. And that's what that team is filled up of. Guys like Kawhi, they're filled with Kawhi Leonard's on that team. And it is special to watch. It's fun to watch. And I just don't know. It's different because, you know, the Thunder play, you know, if Westbrook and Durant, if both of those guys aren't playing great, or at least one of them playing great, it's hard for the Thunder to win games. And as opposed to a team like the San Antonio Spurs, where they're big three, of course, Ginobili, Duncan, and Parker. I mean, you can count on at least one of those guys having a big game. But even if not, I mean, even if two of those guys, two of those three don't have a big game, you can see contributions from other people and other moves being made, not necessarily being affected in the points column, but in rebounds, assists, that type of thing. It's tough to beat the Spurs. They seem to be on a mission right now.
It is. They're an amazing organization.
They are.
I would say they're the best in the NBA right now,
right,
just top to bottom. It's amazing what they do. And you mentioned Kawhi Leonard. There is no other team I can see him playing for than the San Antonio Spurs.
He's the perfect fit there.
He really is. I mean, he played 16 minutes last night. I don't know if you could name another player of his caliber at his stage in his career who would be okay playing 16 minutes in a playoff game.
Right.
Like, it just seems like that is a recipe for disaster with most people. But in the organization, what the Spurs have built, it's all about the team. It's team, team, team. And you look at the stats, I don't know if they were more impressive offensively or defensively, mm-hmm, because they completely shut the Thunder down, and then they lit it up at the other. I mean, you shoot 50%, 40% from three, 91% from the line. Every team category, they dominated, except for fast break points, which they lost 13-11. Every other category, they had the upper hand. It is incredible. I mean, they out-rebound them by 15. They have 27 assists on 41 made baskets.
Wow, that's amazing.
I mean, they share the ball so well.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they're doing. And then you look at the Thunder, Westbrook and Durant go 13 for 40.
Yep.
The rest of the starting five goes 2 for 9.
Terrible.
For 4 points.
You see the shot differential there? I mean, that's a huge disparity between those two guys and the rest of that starting lineup. And I mean, and that's what you just don't see from the Spurs. I mean, the Spurs, cohesively, they play as a unit. One guy isn't trying to take all the shots. They play as a team. And I think right now, I'm going to go on record to say this too, I think Tony Parker's the best point guard in the entire NBA right now.
He's amazing. He's so underrated, too. They all are.
Oh, they all are. Yeah, every single player on that team is. I mean, Alex, what are your thoughts on last night's game, man?
The only other thought I have other than what you've discussed is, what more will it take for the Spurs to be recognized as one of the best dynasties ever?
Well, I think they are. I think they are.
If they win this series and beat the Heat, would you put them as one of your top two or three?
Oh, you're already choosing the Heat to go in the. Well, did you choose? No, you chose the. Oh, so you're already. You're just contradicting this pick. Hold
back
on now.
Off that pace,
hold
on, Alex.
No, I'm not changing my pick.
Oh, you just said when they play
the
Heat.
You're telling me. No.
Right.
No.
Should we rewind the tape just now?
You're telling me that if the Pacers advance and the Spurs beat the Pacers, you think that would look as good as if the Spurs beat the Heat? I don't think so.
Well, hold on.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I'm going to choose the Heat here.
Oh, well, you just did kind of, because you said
when or if they play the Heat in the finals and they beat the Thunder, would beating the Heat be a lot better than beating the Pacers? Yes.
Oh,
agreed upon. So if they beat the Heat, what more would it take? They've done everything. That's multiple championships. The criticism before was a little bit of lapse. You compare them to the Celtics and the old Laker teams who have kind of won in different segments of every 10 years. Yeah, and they've been able to win after maybe a break of 3 to 4 years. So you wonder what more can they do?
Looking at that, it's so unique with the Spurs, excuse me, because the Spurs, like you said, they've done it. It's not like they've won back-to-back-to-back championships. They've done it. They've a championship here, maybe 2 years off. A championship there, 3 years off. A championship there. Look, that shows to me consistency, though. Over a long stretch of time, for the Spurs to still be in that conversation of elite dominance in the league, I mean, that's a great formula, and they're always in the talks of a championship every single year. Every single year we say, oh, the Spurs are too old. This will be the year when they finally just kind of fade into the background and, you know, the spotlight goes off of them. They kind of, you know, the dust is settled on the Spurs. But we say that every year, and every year it seems like they just get better. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we keep trying to bury them. I mean, this goes back literally 5 years.
It does.
I mean, since they beat LeBron for that title, once they kind of passed the mantle on, I think people just started overlooking them and saying, you know what, it's over. They had their run. It's done. To answer Alex's question, I think if they win the title this year and they do beat the Heat, I think they have to go down as one of the all-time greats.
But does it matter?
I don't know if it really matters, but at the same time, you need that other title to kind of bookend things.
Right. I don't care. I don't think it matters who they beat, whether it be the Pacers or whether it be first of all, let me focus on this series real quick, guys. You guys think it's done? Is it a sweep? Are you guys calling a sweep here?
I don't think it's a sweep. No. I think it's done, though.
Yeah, I do think it's done.
Close to it. Not sure about a sweep, but it's probably done.
I may go with Spurs in five now, though.
Yeah, I think there's going to be one game where Durant and Westbrook just go like crazy town and score like 45 points each or something crazy like that. But other than that, they just don't have the staying power. Without Ibaka, they can't win the series.
Yeah, I agree. Ibaka was a huge blow to this series for the Thunder. But yeah, I think when the Spurs move on, I think they will move on. I think it doesn't matter. If they beat the Heat or the Pacers, an NBA championship is an NBA championship at the end of the day. I mean, it's the best of the best in both conferences going at it. It probably will mean a little more if they do beat the Heat and the aura that surrounds the Heat. But at the same time, a ring is a ring, you know? Yeah, a ring is a ring.
And the only thing you could hold against the Spurs dynasty is that they never won back-to-back titles. But to win titles 15 years apart from one another is absolutely ridiculous. And to be consistently good through that entire 15-year period is nuts. And I think if they do win the title, Duncan will retire.
Right.
Popovich might retire. I think it'll be the end of an era
if
they
do
win.
You think Pop will
retire? I feel like he might. If Tim Duncan leaves, I think Pop might ride off into the sunset with
him. I think if they win, I think Tim may come back to see if they can defend it. Then if not, then they
maybe
retire.
But it's possibly always good to go out on top. Everybody loves going out on top.
It is. You know, I wish Michael Jordan would listen to that. All right, anyway, guys. Throwback Thursday, man. What we got, man?
Oh, boy. We got a lot of stuff. How much time do we have? Okay, not that much. All right, let's go quick here. 1911, Braves pitcher Cliff Curtis. Tough break for Cliff. He loses his 23rd game in a row. Yikes. Not a great start for Cliff.
Nasty.
1922, the New York Yankees, who were sharing the polo grounds with the New York Giants since 1913, begin construction on their own stadium in the Bronx. So Yankee Stadium starting to be built this day, 1922. Moving ahead 40 years, in 1962, Roger Maris walks five times, a record four intentional walks in a nine-inning game. In 1970, the Buffalo Sabres and Vancouver Canucks were officially granted franchises for the 1970-71 season, so the birth of the Sabres and Canucks. Moving on here, more new teams. In 1991, the NFL owners agree to add two teams in 1994. Those would become the Carolina Panthers and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So they get the green light on this day in 1991. Moving ahead to 1994, Toronto unveils their NBA franchise, the name Raptors and the logo. So it's the birth of the Raptors as well.
Nice. Gotta love that.
Yeah, just a lot of teams getting their start. In 2002, Cubs fans, sit down for this one. Mark Pryor became only the 14th Chicago Cubs pitcher since 1920 to win his major league debut. Of course,
Something positive for the Cubs.
Yeah, well, it didn't last long because, of course, I think we all know what happened to Mark Pryor.
Yeah, we know what happened to Mark.
Poor guy. He was going to be really good.
He was. It's
injuries,
sad.
Injuries will do that to you. And then in 2003, very busy year this day in 2003, at the Colonial in Fort Worth, Texas, Annika Sorenstam became the first woman to play on the PGA Tour in 58 years. She ended her day at one over par. Also on this day in 2003, high school basketball star, perhaps you've heard of him, LeBron James signs a $90 million Nike endorsement deal.
I will never forget that deal.
Wow.
That's
I don't think LeBron will either.
No.
His first $90 million.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got it on his wall.
Yep.
My first 90 mil. Here it is. Thanks,
my first
Nike.
90 mil. I tell you, LeBron is just rolling in the dough, man. And it's got to be good to be rich. My goodness.
It's got to be good to be Nike. To be able to throw $90 million at a high school senior and just be like, yeah, you know what? If it doesn't pan out, it doesn't pan out.
Phil Knight, man, has got just a billionaire.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's all right. I got.
There you have that. Thanks a lot, Matt. Throwback Thursday brought to you for today's current sports. Well, we are out of time, ladies and gents. Catch Current Sports TV tonight as I sit down with MSU fullback back in the 88 Rose Bowl, James Moore. You don't want to miss that tonight at 10 p.m. on WKR-TV. Thanks so much for tuning in. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Thursday. And be easy, people.